Welcome to the Cashflow Champs podcast, the show where we demystify real estate investing so you have the tools you need to gain financial freedom through passive investments in real estate. And now your host, Cashflow Champs Managing Partner, Prashant Kumar.
Well, hello. This is Prashant Kumar. I'm here with my partner, Paul Sr. You are listening to Cashflow Champs Real Estate Podcast. With us today, we have an esteemed guest, Sandhya Seshadri. Sandhya, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's such an honor. I've known you for many years, and it's a pleasure to be here on your podcast.
Sandhya is a savvy investor with over 25 years in stock market. She has been an entrepreneur, author, speaker at multiple national conferences with 4,000 plus doors and invested as general partners and limited partners. She is an experienced hands-on asset manager with $140 million plus asset under management in DFW area and multiple full life cycle deals exceeding initial projections to investors. Sandhya loves visiting her properties frequently and serve her communities with periodic resident activities. She's an electrical engineer by profession with over a decade of experience managing large $80 million plus programs with 250 plus person project teams across the globe for a Fortune 500 company. Her passion is to help women, youth with financial literacy and math, and she has been tutoring students for free for over a decade. That's super awesome to know, Sandhya, about your background. We are humbled to have you here. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. And like most Indian engineers, I started out with a strong math background, did my engineering, realized quickly that all the sales and financial people were making the decisions in the company. So I wanted to understand that. My company was kind enough to send me to school for a part-time MBA and pay for it. And that's where I got all my financial knowledge. So I moved from technical roles to management roles, business roles, and in parallel was part of several investor clubs. And that's where I got my knowledge of the stock market. And so when I had children, I went full-time into trading stock while spending time with my kids. And I got into real estate because I was looking for a way to save on taxes. And I skipped single family completely because I just didn't have the confidence to be a handy person doing all these fix and flips and stuff. And I figured like the whole four T's, you know, the tenants, toilets, trash, and termites just wasn't exciting. So I attended a weekend seminar actually by Brad Sumrock, who you had interviewed today. And I was sold on the whole asset management side because project management, program management is what I've done for a living in my company. So, you know, monitoring KPIs, having a close watch, but having on-site teams to do the day-to-day work for you, right? The leasing and the work orders, et cetera, just was appealing. So it was like a perfect fit for what I was looking for. And that's why I got into it a little over 4 years ago, started out investing passively because, you know, before you become a pilot, it's good to be a passenger. I always use that analogy and understand what turbulence could be, et cetera, before I have to take the reins and try to navigate all of that myself. So I was a passenger first, then I became a co-pilot with more experienced sponsors. And then now I'm a lead and I love the asset management side in addition to underwriting, you know, with my math skills being an engineer. And I think we all have to raise capital. So we do a little of everything.
So what had inspired you to come into apartments? You know, I mean, you were doing a good job, you know, you were making money, you know, your kids were happy. What inspired you to come into apartments, you know, and then running, chasing, you know, these folks, the property managers, you know, tell us a little bit more about it.
The 90% of millionaires we hear do so through real estate. And I wanted to do something with real estate, but single family just didn't have the margins when I did the analysis in addition to the 40s. So in Dallas, especially, you know, properties didn't appreciate back in the day, at least in the 2000 to 2010, et cetera, quite as much as they have the last 4 or 5 years. So my margins were barely going to be $200-$300 a month. And one big repair and all of that is going to go, or a tenant doesn't pay, or, you know, you're in between tenants and stuff. It just seemed like a lot of headache for the amount of work to do. That's why on a large scale, multifamily made sense. The biggest challenge was I needed to learn again, like going to school and educating myself and being able to talk with confidence to investors. And that took some time. So first passive, then partnering with experienced GPs. My first deal was with partners who are located out of state. And so I could add value to them. I've lived in Dallas now for 32 years. So So I really know my market. I know my cities in and out. You give me an address, pretty much in 5 minutes, I could tell you if I'm even interested. So I don't screen 200 deals to find that one gem. I already know based on address if I'm even slightly interested. And then now that I've done so many deals and looked at so many deals, I also know what's a reasonable price per door for that vintage of property in today's market, right? With the rising interest rates versus a year ago or 2 years ago. So I don't have to screen a lot of deals, but that's one of the strengths I bring in. So when my partners were out of state, had done single family, et cetera, and small multifamily, they wanted to get into the Texas market. So it was a good partnership and I found them through my mentoring program. And that's how I got started in my journey. And that's why it made sense. If going by myself with no real estate background was too scary. So there's no way I could do it unless I had people with experience guiding me. It's like trying to pilot a plane with before you've even been a passenger or a co-pilot. You know, it's kind of scary.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, the experience speaks loud for itself, without a doubt. So tell people, what is asset management? And from a high level, I mean, why is it important in being part of a syndication team to have a good asset manager on your team?
Well, operations or asset management at the end of when you close a deal is the most important part. It's where rubber meets the road. It's where you have to execute the business plan. You've made all these projections and they look great on the webinar slides, but now it's reality. It's like, okay, the wedding was great. The honeymoon is over. Now is reality. Now is your marriage. You got to make it last, right? So this is 3 to 5 years. So executing the business plan is extremely important. So hopefully right from the beginning, you had a property management company fully aligned with your business plan, and they agree to all of your numbers. That's your rent increases, your sources of other income, and you had quotes from insurance company. You have a property tax protest company. If you're in Texas, that's a very big deal. May not matter in Atlanta or in Phoenix, but in Texas, that's a big deal. So you already have all of these neutral third parties agreeing to your plan. Now it's time to execute. So we have some basic KPIs that we monitor every month. The first one is always your top line revenue or collections. That's one number that nobody can fudge, you know, accrual accounting, whatever, et cetera. That one number, that's the most important number. So that's what I give as a target to my on-site PMs. This month, you must collect, you know, 120K as an example, or whatever that magical number is. So that's a very important target we must hit every month. So I start looking at, okay, every week when I have a call, okay, today's the 20th of the month. Did you meet or exceed the number we have? Because you only have a few more days left before the end of the month. That's a very important target. The next one is your operating expenses, right? So that's your admin, that's your personnel, that's all of the regular maintenance things you do, like your lawn, your landscape, your any other utilities, et cetera. Why is one bill a little bit higher this month than what we projected? Did we have a leak? Why is my utility bill up? Did we have to hire extra personnel because it's the first few months? Why is my personnel cost 25K instead of being 15K, et cetera, right? So you monitor your operating expenses because your top line revenue collections, which is your rent plus other income, minus these operating expenses is the next most important metric, NOI, net operating income. That net operating income is the number everybody looks at. Your lender looks at that number, your potential buyer looks at that number, your listing broker looks at that number, because that number is sort of like, what is the total income your family gets as a paycheck? And is it enough to cover your mortgage, let alone any other repairs and other things that could come up? So that NOI is crucial, and we have a target for that NOI. So we try to see if you're having to repair the same air conditioner over and over, is it better to replace it? Because if I replace the AC, then that's a one-time capital expense rather than the repair expense, which becomes part of operations. So revenue, operating expenses, NOI. These are your three most revenue-based, money-based expenses. After that, there's what we call below-the-line expenses. That's where your mortgage comes in, and then any capital you're spending. And do you have a budget for that capital? And are you staying within that budget? Did you plan to do exterior paint? Did you plan to do interiors? What's your average cost for an interior that you budgeted? Did you stay within that budget, or did you have to end up spending more? So you want to monitor that. Additional KPIs that are very important for tracking are your basic occupancy. Is my occupancy where it needs to be? Or did the unit come with, you know, the apartment come with a bunch of bad tenants that I have to clear out before I can fill it up with the right tenant base, in which case my occupancy may take a slight dip those first few months before it goes back up. And if that's part of the plan, you want to communicate that, because when you send these monthly reports to investors, you don't want to surprise them by saying, oh, we were at 95% occupancy when we bought the property, but now it's only 85. Well, you want to have a reason for that. And depending on your lender, they always like to see that 90%, especially on agency loans. So your occupancy is very important, and your delinquency. So physical occupancy is where you have 100 doors, 90 are occupied, that's 90% occupancy. But if only 85 of them pay, then you have an additional 5% of what we call economic occupancy that's not accounted for. So your economic occupancy is actually 15%, while your physical vacancy is 10%, right? So economic vacancy is 15%. So you want to monitor that. You want to look at a delinquency report every week and see why these tenants are not paying. Do they have a promise to pay? Do they have some assistance coming? What are you doing about, you know, evicting them if they're refusing to pay, et cetera? So you want to discuss that on a weekly basis. Next, if occupancy is an issue, you want to make sure your marketing dollars are spent on the right things. Maybe I'm paying for some fancy websites, et cetera, but my last five good leases only came from referral, word of mouth, et cetera. Then why am I paying for those things? So really got to dig into every one of your expenses and spending. Like, why do you have $200 a month in leasing printers when you could probably go to the store and buy a printer for your leasing manager as well as your, you know, property manager for $200 each and be done with it? So just look through all expenses. So we look at operating expenses very closely because it impacts NOI, but we also look at the net cash flow, which is from paying after the NOI, your mortgage, and any other capital expenses. So you have a net cash bottom line number. You want to be net cash positive because that's the money left to distribute back to your investors. So those are, at a very high level, the most important KPIs we monitor to give us a good feel for how we are heading. So you want to monitor trend. So look at a 3-month trend, a 6-month trend. Are we heading in the right direction? Because month to month, there may be some variation, especially when you take over. Not everything gets billed correctly the first couple of months, and all of that takes a little while to get sorted out. But at a high level, you want to make sure you and your team, especially property management, is aligned on the business plan and is working towards the same common goal.
So yes, at a high level, we talked about it, and I want to go a little bit deeper into it, Sandhya. I mean, I want to give like the deep, you know, deep nuggets to our audience. You know, what are you doing? What are you doing to improve the top number, and what are you doing to decrease the operational expense? I know we don't have control over the debt, so we really don't want to go below the line number. We want to discuss these two items. You know, what are the specific things that you are doing day to day when you are talking to the PM, and keep and holding them accountable for that? You know, I mean, you have projected something and you want to hold them accountable. So tell us a little bit more. I mean, give us some colors there, if you don't mind.
So initially at acquisition, you want to try to buy properties where the current rents are far below market rents of a comparable property. So that's your, one of your tools is, okay, if I can get $1,200 here for a 2-bedroom, but the property next door, which is very similar to mine, is getting $1,400. Why are we not getting it? Can you walk a unit there and see, is that more fancy? Are they providing better amenities, et cetera? So that competitive shopping is very important to get that. So do I have to spend a little more on my interior upgrades, et cetera, is one question. The second one is, what are amenities the resident is easily willing to pay for? Typically, washer dryer connections is always a win. Providing those washer dryers is always a win because it's part of the resident's budget anyway. Same thing, depending on your demographic, some people prefer just Wi-Fi as internet because they stream Netflix, versus others like the whole cable internet package. So that's another great way to see if it makes sense. Now, your reserved and covered parking, is there a need for it? Once you drive the property, you see what neighboring properties are doing, you can do a survey of your residents and say, can I give you free parking for a month when you renew or get a new lease in? And then you can see if you really like it, and then we'll paint a stripe, and there you go, $25 extra per month. Is that something they appreciate and they're willing to pay for? So again, look at it from your customer's eyes. They're on a $50K annual income. So every $50, $100 really matters to them. So find ways where you can add value to them in which they are willing to pay for it. That's always the first. The second one is just competitive analysis, right? Your rent is far below the competitors. You have to raise it, so you have to give them notice. And sometimes it hurts to say that to the tenants because you feel like you are robbing them or you're, you know, being unfair to them. But if they try to shop around, we've had that happen to us. They shopped around, they said, oh my God, you guys are still way better. This is such a nicer property, et cetera. So you want to be fair, But at the same time, you have to look out for both your residents as well as your investors. Other income sources, there are so many different ways you could do that. Like I said, parking, washer dryers, cable Wi-Fi are always the popular ones. Pets, right? Do you keep track of all the pets in your property and how do you do that? So whenever you have pest control coming in, that's a chance for your maintenance to walk those units also. You can tell the pest control guy, if you saw a pet in this unit, go ahead and mark it for us. That's an easy way to find that out. Or your maintenance can go in to change filters or something. That's an easy way to find that out because that's just basically what we call free money. Other ways you can do it is if your property has downstairs units that are far more convenient versus lugging your groceries, furniture, everything upstairs, you can just code them all like a D or something and charge a little more for them. Maybe it's just $20, but for the convenience of living downstairs, you charge a little more. Same thing with corner units or units with a view. You have a lake view, you have a, I don't know, golf view, you have a pretty view, or you don't have a neighbor next to you because you're a corner unit, you have slightly bigger size balcony, et cetera. You can code those units differently and charge a little premium for them. So these are all some of the ways for increasing your revenue, your rental income, and your other income. But in terms of decreasing your expenses, just go through every line item and say, if this was me, my household, and we were living paycheck to paycheck, like I was when I was a student, as an example, or my early years of, you know, having a W-2, how closely would I scrutinize it? Do I need a copier, as one of the examples I said? Why don't I just buy instead of rent some of those things? Is my marketing budget being spent in the right places? What about outsourcing only the things that my maintenance can do? So we get a HVAC certified maintenance person. So we don't ever have to call somebody else for air conditioning repairs because that can get expensive for us. Another thing we do is we try to do make readies in-house, but it's hard to staff that many people. So let's say that next month, I know I'm going to have 10 move outs and 10 make readies to do. Then I will see if my property management company can just loan me people for that week. And so I just get charged the extra hours for that week instead of contracting the entire unit upgrade elsewhere. Because whenever you contract things out, the expenses get a little more out of hand. The other basic I always say is if your unit is already pre-leased and it's in high demand and you're already renting it at market rent that you need to get to, why do fancy upgrades? Don't do fancy upgrades. Stick with a basic make ready. And a nice paint job can do wonders to a property if you're already pre-leased at your market rent, because then it's a potential upgrade for the next buyer to do it. Because if you did everything at a platinum upgrade, then, you know, in 2-3 years when you're selling it, there's not as much upside left for the next buyer. And then keep track of that. Outsourcing your materials directly, maybe from a supplier. Like there are some people who buy bulk flooring, as an example, directly from China. Some of the vertically integrated companies do that. But we also know some direct suppliers. So they can get it to us a lot cheaper than the typical companies from which our PM outsources it. Some of them can even install it for us. So find ways to do that. Always get 3 bids for everything. So whether that's your lawn and landscape, your pest control, et cetera, get this. Something as simple as valet trash or just trash and pest control. Let's say you're not billing anything for trash and pest control. And you say, I'm going to charge you $5 extra for it. It may not seem like much money to you. But at $5 times 200 doors, you're $1,000 a month. That's $12,000 a year on a 5 cap, that's $240K. So little things quickly start adding up. Find the hidden pennies in the couch. Where else can you cut back on your expenses? So line by line, right? Admin, website, is your website really necessary? Can you do a Facebook marketplace kind of play ad and just, you know, push your property that way instead of having a fancy website? Where do your leads come from? Track that. Salaries is a big one. So if you can do your work with fewer personnel, that's always going to be a big one. So in one of our properties recently, at the time of takeover, we needed more hands on deck just to get everything turned and the right kind of residents, et cetera. But once we settled, I would say at about 4 to 5 month mark, we didn't really need a leasing assistant. So what we did, we took our property manager, gave her a bit of a raise, because she had done such a fantastic job. And she said she can do without a leasing agent. So right there, I saved a bunch on payroll. So look for opportunities like that. Have those conversations. Like I try to go and have lunch at least once every couple of months where I just listen to them. I tell them, tell me everything. Tell me all your problems. I'm going to come around the middle of the month when you're not busy with collections or with end of month numbers, et cetera. So middle of the month, I plan. I have a lunch sit down with them. tell me all your problems. I'll solve at least two of them for you now, and I'll put the others on my list. And so the people who work the job, just like in corporate, the person actually doing the job can come up with the most creative ideas. So they can tell you what things they can do. Another little thing is just lease violation. Somebody sets trash out, somebody's always messing up. There's always the same teenage kids doing vandalism, whatever, at your property. Have cameras to monitor it. And this particular property manager at our property in Carrollton, she just takes a printout from the camera footage and shows it and say, this is why I'm charging you $50. It's your team who did this. Or, you know, they're doing funny business in the laundry room. Like, okay, do you want me to put this out? Or do you want to just pay the violation and tell your team not to do this again? So every little thing adds up to being more operationally efficient. So when they know that that lease violation is coming for setting trash out in the wrong place and not really putting it inside the dumpster, they won't do it again. And it sends a message to all residents across the board. Another thing we like to do is community activities. So periodic, like for Easter, we had the Easter bunny out and everybody took pictures and we had an Easter egg hunt. It's a pretty inexpensive thing to do. So we take that actually out of our marketing budget. What it does is it builds a community. And so neighbors know each other. So it reduces your crime, but it's also an opportunity for them to get to know the on-site staff pretty well. So when there's an issue, they feel comfortable coming to you and saying, hey, I think I'm gonna be behind on my rent. I think I'll be able to pay and catch up in, you know, 2 weeks and things like that. So all those good conversations happen. Another big target for us is retention and renewals. So these activities help with that. And when residents realize that we're on the ball with, you know, customer service, you have a leak, it's gonna get serviced. We monitor how long it takes for them to service work orders because that's part of your customer satisfaction. So we say that our minimum target is 60% on renewals, but we have bonuses if it's 80% for renewals, but it's gotta be at the market rent. So what do? We might give an existing resident on renewals an appliance package. Oh, we'll switch your refrigerator out for a stainless steel fridge. We'll give you a new fan. What else would you like? We're gonna renew you, which means I don't waste a single day of turning the unit, of getting non-payment, right? Just like, you know, the empty seats on a plane after it takes off. I'll never recover that revenue. So we focus heavily on renewals. I think that's going to be the biggest source for anyone to want to cut costs is focus on renewals. And if the resident says, okay, I can't afford to pay $200 more, but maybe they're like, you're arguing over at $50. Think about $50 times 12 months. You're talking $600. Today, what is your turn cost? At a minimum, you're talking $3,000, $2,000 to $3,000, easy. So look at that, right? If you're trying to cut costs because you're on a floating rate loan and you really got to, you know, penny pinch, think about the ROI every time you want to spend dollars and think about this $50, arguing over $50 versus just keeping that tenant. So renewal is a big one for us.
These are awesome tips, Sandhya, which you gave. You know, it's like totally about the asset management, you know.
Yeah.
So besides asset management, you know, I know you are involved in, you know, equity raising and things like that. Where do you see the market is going? You know, what is the sentiment in terms of the, I mean, I'm kind of pivoting from asset management into the future. Where do you think market is going and how are your investors reacting to any new deals or any capital calls, if at all any? Tell us a little bit something about that if you have.
So we're in April 2023 right now. We expect an increase definitely by a quarter point in May. The question is that the end or is there going to be additional rate increases? That's the, you know, million-dollar question here. What we are doing is we are preparing for the worst, which means there's going to be more rate hikes and the rate hikes won't stop till 2024 first quarter. So I'm looking at what happens in April 2024, a year from today, if the rate hikes don't stop. So fortunately, all my deals have 3-year rate cap on my bridge deals. So I'm not in danger as long as that rate cap, the rate increase is stopped by then. But what if they don't come down after that? You've got to look at your worst case scenarios for every deal and see how you can react to it. Are you better off selling for a slight loss? Are you better off selling for break even versus waiting longer, hoping for the best case scenarios to happen, which you know may not happen? If the best case scenario happens, which is, okay, May is the last rate hike, no more rate hikes for 9 months, and then the rates might actually fall. That's a best case scenario right now that we're looking at. And we're all ready for it. It's not like you have to prepare for a best case scenario. So you always want to be prepared for the worst case scenario by penny pinching, being careful about your spending, doing your rent increases, and having a plan to address delinquency. and looking at scenarios with two people in your world. The one of them is your lending broker. Your lender or your lender broker, constantly send them your financials because they will give you a feel for today. If you refi, this is what you get in proceeds, but you really need a million more or 2 million more. They'll tell you what you have to do. So they'll give you the steps in the next 6 months. Do this with your net rental income. Do this with your other income. Do this with your expenses. They'll give you guidelines. Same thing, give it to your listing broker and they will tell you what to do. What is the upside potential for the next buyer? Show me, et cetera. And so they'll give you guidelines. So keep doing what these two resources tell you as you hope for the best, but you're prepared for the worst.
That is just key information. Really appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, a lot of people has bought a rate cap. And of course, you know, probably in a year or so, that's going to expire. If that do happen, then, you know, your debt kind of just skyrocket in a lot of ways. There's really no way of controlling. Are you speaking to your investors about probably a capital call, anything like that, or you think that's just premature right now?
So my deals, thankfully, are not in danger of a capital call because our rate caps don't expire till 2024. And thankfully, these deals have done well. So my debt service coverage ratio is still greater than one, meaning my net operating income is enough to cover the mortgage. So our deals have done well in that sense. So the other thing is, like I said, we speak with the lender broker and the listing broker. So we know when it's all going to come to a head. And we're thinking March, April 2024 is our time to list. I do have more anxious investors because of all the things that have been happening. I'm also a passive investor myself, so I have that concern. I have two passive deals that have made capital calls. So we have the conversation. So every month in my monthly report that goes out in writing to investors, we tell them, this is why we're not at a risk of a capital call. And here are the top 5 or 10 signs that your deal is in distress. And so the first step is the SBR lesson. When I make a lot of posts on LinkedIn as well as Facebook about these things, but that's your first sign. If your debt service coverage ratio is less than one, look at your loan agreement. See how much that gap is. Is it 5K or 10K? Whatever that gap is, try to cover that gap ASAP. And if you think it's unrealistic between you and your property management company to cover that gap, then look at selling, look at refining, because your lender is not, bridge lenders are not going to be lenient on this stuff. They're going to crack down on this. Okay. So in terms of conversations with investors, I have some who are very much like me, math geeks who love their spreadsheets. So we sit like this in a Zoom call and we geek out on all the numbers. And then there's others who say, tell me everything is okay. I said, this is why everything is okay. But just look at these three numbers every month when I send you a report. Call me if you have questions. Don't have sleepless nights. And I'll tell you the risk, just like it is. I'm telling you, if interest rates keep on going up and they don't come down same time a year from now, we may have a problem. But why worry about something a year from now? Let's keep working on the things within our control, which is increase revenue, decrease expenses, periodically send financials, listen to the advice of the two people whose help we're going to need either to refi or to sell. And that's it.
That's beautiful. And that gives them a sense of calm, keep their communication going. And yep. Then that way, what's your team's take at this point in time? Are you guys still actively looking at opportunities that are coming out right now? Or, you know, how are you going about the current market in terms of business growth?
If the deal comes through, it satisfies our requirements of location. We do not compromise at all on location because it's something we cannot change. Very, very particular about that. The second thing is we want a nice fixed rate agency loan with a prepayment penalty that could be stepped down, or it's so good that it doesn't matter. Somebody would want to assume it. We want to get that 5 years interest only, et cetera. So we have lending criteria. We have a direct lender, DUS lender, who works directly with Freddie or Fannie. So we can lock in that rate early if we need to, which is what we did on our two deals last year. So if it satisfies my little box, which is amazing neighborhood in Dallas that I know very well because I live here, all my properties are within a 30-minute drive of my house. So if I have to drive 2 hours out to Waco or something, it's like, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. And so I need that control. I need to be able to drive. So if it fits my box, I will jump on a deal like you wouldn't believe. I won't sleep tonight. If a broker sends me a deal today that I want, I will not sleep tonight. I will do my OD on caffeine. I will drive by the property at night because that'll get me a pulse for it. As soon as you give me a zip code, I'm going to go drive tonight. I can't wait to drive tonight if you send me a deal that I love. And then tonight I'll be underwriting it. because I want to make an offer first thing Monday on that deal if it's that good. And my brokers know my criteria because now I've been in business in this area for 4 years. I have four great brokers living in my neighborhood that I could literally walk to their house. And so I have that connection established. So they know if something fits my box, I'm going to go after it. And so, yeah, it's just got to fit my box. I'm not going to compromise. You know, we're fighting an uphill battle. You've got to underwrite for rising cap rates in the future. So there is no compromise. You want to start with tailwind. You do not want to be slightly hesitant and having any doubt. If you have even one doubt in your head that the deal is not going to work, then don't do it. Because it's better to have no deal than to have sleepless nights worrying about a bad deal.
Sandhya, it feels like talking to you, knowing you more and more every day, you know, it's a great experience. You know, you are telling a lot about yourself, how you think, how you asset manage, how you are underwriting the deals. This is just awesome work that you are doing. I mean, including
you.
including free tutoring to the kids, you know, which is
Yeah, it's a passion of mine. I've always been a big believer in math, and I'm surprised that, you know, coming from India, you could probably relate to this, Prashant. I mean, we always emphasize math. So when I come here and I see so many kids afraid of math, I'm like, why are you afraid of math? Just go to the grocery store. The grocery store is one of your best math lessons. So I homeschool my son for a couple of years. I'm very passionate about that. So we do activities over the summer that's just about grocery math and simple things like that. Math is about everyday life. It's not about doing calculus. Not everybody is designed to do calculus and go into, you know, rocket ship design or something. This is just everyday financial literacy so that you can make ends meet and you can make money in real life doing simple things like, you know, Baba Grump's selling shrimp. You should make money. So you need to understand a basic financial table.
Understood.
That's all it's about.
Your incoming should be more than your outgoing, basically.
That's it, right? Input, output. It's just like if you want to lose weight, guess what? Input has to be less than output, right?
That is correct.
So same concept.
Awesome. So one piece of advice, you know, we are getting into the lightning round. One piece of advice, you know, that impacts your life, you know, and how do you think it will benefit others, you know?
Persistence. Right? Like you and I probably can relate to this. I grew up in India with parents making $50 a month. I wanted to come to the US and it's going to cost me at least $10,000 a year to go to college here. How the heck do I circumvent, you know, such a big barrier? It seems like a big mountain. The way you do it is through assistantship. So there's always a way to get there. Like I wanted to fly first class. I certainly wasn't going to pay full price for it. I found a friend who worked for an airline and I traveled in off-peak time and she was able to get me on a first-class seat, right? So there's always a way. You just got to look for it. America is a land of opportunity and the land of coupons, as you know. And I lived on coupons as a student, $8 a week food budget. So there's always a way to get there. You can fly free to Iceland and back if you want to. I took my family of four to Iceland for free. So you can do it.
Wow. Share one personal habit that contributes to your success and that you think would help others, you know.
So lately I've started believing this more and more, which is, you know, unleash the power within concept by Tony Robbins. But basically I say, I'm unstoppable. If you're going to stop me, I'm just going to find another way around you to work around you to go, you know, do my thing. So it's just like the persistence concept, but the same thing. I'm unstoppable. There's got to be a way that I can, you know, whether it's to save a deal or improve the NOI or whatever, there's got to be something. If I'm out of ideas, there's probably somebody who's got some great ideas. I'm going to keep asking.
How can our listeners reach out to you, Sandhya?
LinkedIn and Facebook is where I post the most. Engineered-capital.com is my website, certainly through Prashant. And if I could say a little thing, I've got this book, Next Level Your Life, where I've written one chapter, so you can find it on Amazon. So if you'd like to read the chapter, it tells you a lot more about me and my struggles and how I came to be where I am today.
Next Level in Your Life, is that the book?
Yeah, Next Level Your Life is the name of the book, and it's available on Amazon. And it's got some great authors, because of which it became a number one bestseller. But I have one chapter in that book, and you'll be inspired awesome. By many of the stories in that book.
That was my last question. What would be the book that you would recommend? And you recommended one.
Ah, great. Perfect timing. Yeah, Next Level Your Life. Amazon. Awesome.
Paul, go ahead.
Now, I just want to say thank you for being on the Cashflow Champs Real Estate Podcast today. You dropped so many good information for our audience to glean on. You know, just a wealth of knowledge just pouring out. And we're just so thankful to have you here today. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate both of you. This has been a pleasure.
And we will see you soon, Sandhya, sometime, you know, in one of these conferences.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Cashflow Champs podcast. Cashflow Champs partners with busy working professionals and entrepreneurs that want to build and maintain generational wealth through real estate. Visit cashflowchamps.com to learn more about us.